21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Zoe Hieronymus.
It's all about soul. It's all about faith and a deeper devotion. It's all about soul. 'Cause under love is a stronger emotion.
Welcome to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Zohara Hieronymus. Laura Kortner is our executive producer, and Aaron Thomas runs our board. Continuing our discussion about soil health and regenerating the earth, Gary Zimmer joins us. Gary is founder of Midwestern BioAg and is known worldwide for teaching and advocating a system of farming he developed over 30 years ago. It's an approach now known as biological farming. Long before many people understood the role of soil microbes, this new approach sought to balance the multiple soil values, which Gary will explain to us. By supporting the soil's biology, as he points out, the applied and existing soil nutrients then become more plant available. In addition, the soil structure improves. Gary's approach leads to significant gains in yield and in the quality of the food and forage grown. This is the process of supporting soil life, and hence, as we understand now, the entire food chain. Thank you, Gary, for joining us this evening.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, I skimmed through your beautiful text, A Complete Guide to Sustainable and Profitable Biological System of Farming. That's the subtext. It's called The Biological Farmer. So having been doing this for 30 years, would you talk to us a little bit about how you even got into this and from what end?
Yes, I'm actually a dairy nutritionist by training, and I was teaching at a technical college in southeastern Minnesota way back in the 70s, and I had to teach all kinds of different classes, including soils and agronomy. It was a small program, so I got introduced to soils. And then what came of that was I, as a dairy nutritionist, I recognized by putting on different minerals and treating the soil differently, we could change the feed. And I said, what would ideal feed for a dairy cow look like if I was going to make it? So that started the whole process of looking at how we treated our soil and this remineralization and how getting minerals exchangeable and where biology fit in. And so that started way back in the 70s, and I left the teaching and started a private business and started farming on my own because I wanted to experiment with some of these ideas that I had gained through those experiences.
That's fascinating. And so did you actually make a feed based on what you discovered?
Yes, we actually came up with a formula of what kind of feed cows really perform well on. And so it's generally got a higher level of calcium uptake, which affects the digestibility. It's also got more trace minerals and different minerals. It's got ratios and balances of certain kinds of minerals in that feed. And when we produce that kind of feed, the cows do really well on it. And so we were able to feed a much higher forage diet to our animals and depend less upon supplements.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at dairy nutrition, really what a dairy nutritionist does, and I suppose a human nutritionist would be similar, you take a look at what we're feeding the cow, and whatever is missing, we have to add, whether that be minerals or proteins or everything else. And so very few people turn back and say, well, why don't I go back to the soil and see if I can change the feed so I have to supplement less?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what this is, what's been driving this thing. Today, I work with almost any crop imaginable all over the planet. But it started out by feeding cows. I said, our cows get fed better than most people on the planet.
Isn't that the truth? You know, when you have knowledgeable, it's like people say they want to come back as one of my dogs.
Yes, I understand that.
I knew you would. Well, you have an enormous farm yourself, but I loved in your book how you tie all these things together. For the biological farmer, you're not just talking soil, you're talking soil, then crops, then livestock. And that if you don't look at them all together, you're not going to have a balanced farm and you will probably suffer economically as well.
Yes, and then the problems come along, and I spent my 9 years at the university also, and what I'm saying is that they very seldom can look at systems research because it's too complex, and they usually test a product or a program, but they never look at the whole system. And so if we look at a systems approach and say that it does go all the way through, I tell the dairy farmers, you actually get paid twice for what we're doing, once to grow the crop, and then you get paid again when you feed it to the cows because now the cows are going to do better.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just selling that feed to the general food chain out here in the countryside, why people don't necessarily reward for quality. That's not how we get paid as farmers.
And, of course, one of the great challenges that pretty much everybody I've ever interviewed talks about is the land-grant colleges and sort of the agricultural training that people get is still sort of what they call conventional. You know, as you point out, conventional is 50 years of chemical warfare on the land, basically, my words. But that's not really traditional farming at all. That was just since World War II.
That is correct. And you don't want to... These chemicals and things first came along because I was raised on Wisconsin dairy farm. The idea was, boy, we're going to be able to control weeds, and we're going to, with this nitrogen and these commercial fertilizers, we'll be able to grow lots more biomass, and we'll really build soils. Well, 50 years later, it went the other direction. And then they said, well, you must be doing too much tillage. So 20 years of no-till, all that did was bring carbon to the top, and it's still oxidized, and I think nitrogen's a big part of it. It's a whole system that was out of a range. I guess I don't blame people at the university. I just think what they get paid to do research on and what the research is, they miss the whole system. Mm-hmm. They just do parts and pieces. Of course, you get a sick plant, they come up with a new drug,
right,
take care of the sickness. They never say, well, how can we prevent that? And that's
exactly
really what biological farming is doing everything you can to get those soils healthy and mineralized. Now you grow healthy, productive crops, and you don't have the need for all that intervention with chemistry.
Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, reading about the Dust Bowl when they took all the buffalo away, and then the monocrop came in of wheat, which the government subsidized, and then et cetera, et cetera. We lost this whole notion of rotation. Why is crop rotation so important?
So I think it took me a long time to figure this out, and I'll give it to you in about 10 seconds. The plants determine the soil life. It's no different, I suppose, than what we eat or what animals determines organisms in our body. So if we have a diversity of plants, we have a diversity of soil life, and that diversity of soil life that we have then allows no one population of disease or insects to overpower.
Mm-hmm.
Just like all of us got E. coli in our stomach, that doesn't mean we're sick because we got good guys against bad guys. So this diversity of plants is critical for soil health because it keeps the biological balance in check. And see, that's been kind of ignored. You talked about the Dust Bowl days of all wheat. And that's why I said, look at today, we're subsidized corn beans here in the Midwest. That's all. And it's easy to change agriculture. It's not always easy to change people's thinking.
Right. And that's the thing that I've bumped into, because I've always been a supporter of biodynamic, organic, sustainable, you know, any term you want to put to anything but poison agriculture. And the resistance is extraordinary.
And I think we hear all these stories. I don't think people want to change. You've got to recognize that agriculture for the farmer, and you can't blame the farmer for what's been going on, is really simple and easy. And they were forced to get really big because we wanted cheap food, cheap food, cheap food, and we didn't really tie in cleaning up the environment or people's health. So the farmer's been forced to get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. So that means more monoculture. That means larger scale kind of things. But I said the chemical companies, the machinery companies, the seed companies really have completely revolutionized agriculture, and the farmer really became the slave to agribusiness. So that's why this whole thing about they can get yields that way, but what are we doing to our environment and our food quality to get those yields? They can push the soil by putting on commercial fertilizer to get a big pile, if you want to call it that. So that's why I said to change agriculture, it's really the stroke of a pen. Quit subsidizing corn and beans and subsidize a rotation with cover crops.
Mm-hmm.
And subsidize and tax nitrogen so high that people can't afford to buy it. And we will change agriculture.
And where are you seeing this awareness represented? I mean, is there a younger generation of farmer coming along? I mean, I read Acres USA regularly and the homesteading magazines, and it seems to me that there's this revival of 30-somethings who all want to, like, go to the land and grow their own food.
Yeah, and I said I think that's really true. And of course, the people are concerned about their health. I tell people the biggest crisis in agriculture, I mean, we got environmental problems, we got animal torture problems. I don't know which one, that's not the
yeah.
right word, but big confinement operations. We got all these issues. But young people can't afford to get in farming anymore. My
right.
son bought his first farm when he was 16 years old. He now farms 1,000 acres. That was in the early 90s. Today, he couldn't start. Things are so expensive and the land's so expensive, you can't get in the game anymore. So those young people want to come out, but there's no place to get us started into the farming system. So I think a couple of things that's really driving change in agriculture, and I'm really excited about it, is the consumers. And the consumers are starting to recognize in all the magazines and the health that there's some issues with our food, and they're driving it down and forcing the large food companies to make some changes if they want to stay making profit and stay in the business.
Mm-hmm.
The organic segment of farming is really growing. The second thing that's coming along that's really driving change out here is that See, all these years, if I just use corn in the Midwest for an example, 150 bushel corn would have been a good corn crop per acre. Well, last year, the record was 532 bushel corn. If putting on more commercial fertilizer and more chemicals, 200 bushel corn, 175 bushel corn is about the most anybody gets. But now these farmers recognize by doing biological balances, by using other minerals, by using different sources of minerals, by putting in a whole biological farming system, they can really increase their yields. Now, their land cost is the same, the seed cost is the same, so you're seeing this huge wave of young farmers out here that have no choice but to increase production. Everybody's worried about feeding all the people in the world, and I'm wondering what we're going to do with all the feed we can produce.
Mm-hmm.
40% of the corn we produce goes to ethanol, and I said, corn isn't how you feed the world anyway. And so I said, we have the capability under a more sustainable, healthy system to really drive yields. And that's a lot of our new customers that are coming on board are the ones that are really in tune to this, wanting to spend less money on chemistry to prevent problems or to wipe out problems once they got them. They want to prevent them more. And they also want to drive these yields, which we've got a lot of farmers that are really, really doing well on the yield thing. And that's in magazines and cover crops in magazines and soil health is in all the magazines. So the farmers are bombarded with these things, which is kind of exciting.
That's wonderful. You know, and you, when you read, as I pointed out, Acres USA was so wonderful. Fred Walter, who's Charlie's son, gave us your name, and I had known Joanna Campe and Don Weaver from when Christopher Berb was alive, you know, introduced us way back in the 80s.
Oh,
so it had been a long time since we all had chatted, and the thing that always strikes me is, firstly, thank you to all of you for your tenacity and your passion and commitment to have stayed on this road to keep trying to bring younger people in and people who already have large acreage that will change, you know, what they're doing. How difficult is it for a farmer who's been doing chemical farming to change over to biological farming? And how long does it take for the soil to be brought back to health?
And I think within that thing, it's probably, a 3 to 5 year process. Not that you can't see results the first year,
mm-hmm.
but you have to be committed to a different kind of system of farming. And some of them are really locked into how they were farming. And so if we say we normally got to start with a soil test and we start remineralizing, looking at some of their limiting factors, and then starting with a different kind of tillage system if needed, we're really proponents of this zone tillage, which is just like putting a flower pot under every plant. It's like farming this little zone right under where the crop is planted and make sure that's well aerated and mineralized, because then they can get the return faster than correcting their whole farm.
So how? Wait, come back to that, because I do that in my little organic garden, you know, but I have raised beds that are 4 by 10 and I have 10 of them, and that's what I do on the beds. But how do you do that in a massive field of farming?
So they got this equipment that's got this, it runs like either rolling blades or knives or rippers through the ground, that in the fall, generally, they'll go build these zones. They may be 10 inches wide, and then the crop, like corn or beans, are planted 30 inches apart. So then between that, then that soil is kind of just left covered and protected and kind of minimum tilled. But in that zone then, we place that fertilizer in the fall. We would normally place what I call a soil corrective in the fall, which would be maybe extra calcium or some of those big base minerals. Then in the spring, with all their technology and GPS, they go plant right on top of that zone where we mineralize in the fall, and now they put their crop fertilizer. That could be a small amounts of soluble fertilizer. It's organic. We use molasses and fish and some of those products. We'll put right down in the zone then what we plant in. So I'm not planting in hard, tight ground, and I'm planting in my concentration of minerals, and we're not driving on top of that. See, your little raised beds has got a real advantage. You're not driving a 20,000 pound tractor over the top of them.
Exactly. I'm not even walking in it. That's why they're only 4 feet wide, so I can tend them from each side.
We're trying to simulate that on the farm, and we got the tools and equipment and technology today. Now, that zone tillage is very difficult for an organic farm, because our family farm's organic, because we are always growing cover crops. We have our 1,000 acres has 600 acres of row crops, and so everyone had a green manure or cover crop. And green manure, I mean, just something we grow to put back in the soil to feed the soil life.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned how to feed the soil to change the biology. See, as a dairy nutritionist, we learned how to feed the bugs in the cow's gut. I take the same principles of feeding the cow to the soil.
Right.
Feed our soil the same way.
Well, and your book is so thorough, The Biological Farmer, for those in the listening audience who want to have a really serious opportunity to learn, this is a great book by Gary F. Zimmer, The Biological Farmer. You can order it, and I really encourage you all to go to Acres USA online, acresusa.com, and check out all the books they have. You can also call Acres USA to order this book at 1-800-355-5313. Acres USA, if you don't know, is North America's premier publisher on production scale organic and sustainable farming. They've been doing it for more than 40 years. We're going to take a break and then we'll be back with Gary Zimmer, the biological farmer. He's the man himself, the one who brought it all to us and the rest of the world.
Hello, my name is William Waterway. I'm the author of The Holy Order of Water, Healing Earth's Waters and Ourselves, and Water Voices from Around the World. My website is williamwaterway.com, and I enjoy 21st Century Radio with Dr. Zohara Hieronymus. I consider it to be a very enlightened radio broadcast. Thank you.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Gary Zimmer is our guest, and Gary is the founder of Western BioAg. You can find him online at www.midwesternbioagag.com. Gary, talk to us a bit about your business and the kinds of things you do.
Yes. Years ago, I was an educator, and I got involved in this thing, as I mentioned, about the soils thing. And so because I was an educator, I'm not very good in sales, I tell people. So I try to get people convinced through education. That's why I write the books.
Mm-hmm.
I got to know Chuck Walters years ago. I've been going to the Acres Conference since the 1980s, and I've been speaking there since the 90s. And, of course, they published my books, and because that got me all over the planet. So that was always a real big plus. So then when I was teaching in Minnesota, I started doing consulting, but they couldn't get the products I wanted. They could, you know, there was such a limited number, just nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and I didn't really like the sources. So I came back to Wisconsin and got some partners, and we started a fertilizer business. And for the last 30 years, I've been developing mineral balances and carbon-based fertilizers. So it seemed to me, I said, the dumbest idea man ever came up with was putting nutrients in solution and dumping them on the land and not expecting them to get in our lakes and streams and our water.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we put those nutrients, hook them to a carbon before we put them on the soil so they can't leach, they can't erode, and they're already tied to something. And I'm involved in a couple of very large projects right now of taking this on a very large scale, this carbon-based fertilizers. And we do molasses for our liquid crop fertilizers, and we do anaerobic digesting type fertilizers we use for our soils and humates. So I always want my nutrients hooked to carbon, so that's what we developed over the year, this balance of nutrients and checking the sources that are the most exchangeable and the most biologically friendly.
You know, I'm not a farmer. I do have my lovely little organic garden every summer, so I don't really have a grasp of all the things you're saying, and I assume if I don't, probably a lot of our audience doesn't either. So what is the basic for soil health in terms of, I mean, you've mentioned chemicals and you've talked about the balance, but can you give us like the really short, you know, beginner's primer, just so we have a sense of what goes into doing this?
Yes, I think that's why in the conventional world, let's just compare this, basically three elements, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. In the biological world, we not only have different sources, but in the conventional world, if you took nitrogen away, it would be a disaster out here for those guys. So their whole systems depend upon nitrogen, which causes plant health problems down the road, and then they got to protect that plant. In the biological farming system, our king is calcium.
Mm-hmm.
Calcium is the trucker of all minerals, as I call it, and boron's the steering wheel. So calcium is what drives minerals into a plant. Calcium is what makes plants healthy. Calcium's kind of our king, not just having the right pH in the soil, but driving this calcium. So we look at 13 different minerals on a soil test, and plus we use natural-based materials that got all kinds of other minerals in them. So I think it's a kind of a prescription idea of taking a soil test and putting together the right kind of blends of materials, with calcium being our king and our base on this biological farming system.
It's fascinating. And because I was reading your book, I try to be a good student. And I was reading, you know, where you talk about the impact of plant life. We have weeds. We have weather, pests, nutrients, the root systems, the soil life, the soil structure, diseases, and the planting itself. So it's not just a question of plunking seed in the ground and then throwing a bunch of stuff on the soil and hoping it rains.
No, it is not. It's intensive management. Today was Father's Day, and guess what we're doing out on the farm?
Happy Father's Day, by the way.
Thank you. We're out on the farm controlling weeds and cultivating because we farm organically, and we don't have all those other little tools. But I can honestly say we've been farming on that farm since 1991. We have we have weeds we always have to deal with, because if you can't grow weeds, you probably can't grow crops.
Right.
They're just plants that we haven't found a good use for yet. And so anyway, so we got those weed issues, but we learned how to manage them, and the healthier the soils and the better the soil structure, the less problems we have. But so we got those things. But disease and insects, I never see a need for those on my farm, just like I never see a need for antibiotics. Now, if you went to a farmer and said, I'm going to take your antibiotics away, it would probably be a disaster until they learn how to get the animal healthy so the need disappears.
Right.
Like the need for the insecticide disappears when you get that mineralized, healthy, balanced soil and your trace minerals are in there and all the rest of the system.
Well, I've interviewed farmers who have even gone from GMO crop, where they were convinced that, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And what they found was not only was it a poison material that's sterile, but they had to apply even more chemical pesticides. I think it was Ready Roundup. It was the soybean one, Roundup Ready.
Roundup Ready, yeah.
Yeah. That was the one that he said the weeds were so horrific that grew immune to even DDT, which is inserted into its genetic makeup, that they were spraying their fields with so much poison, everybody was getting sick. And finally, he let go of the whole thing and went organic.
Huh. You know, I think that's really true. People think that when I was one of those guys in the beginning, I spent a lot of years at the university, that the GMOs, if we could get rid of insecticides, fungicides, that would be not such a bad thing. Well, then we see the trouble is that if the plant is sick and unhealthy, somebody's going to get it. And so the plant, the weeds and the diseases and bugs and everything can tolerate those chemicals. We have a conventional neighbor, you're right, they sprayed their crop four times last year with more and more harsher chemicals, and they used to put on 16 ounces of Roundup or glyphosate, Monsanto stuff, mm-hmm. and now they do 64 ounces, and they add other things to them because they don't even work anymore.
Exactly.
And so that's a real issue out here, but I guess it's right down to the fact, just like with all the asthmas and allergies and gluten intolerance and things that people have out here, is really how much can we tolerate in our immune systems. Plants have an immune system and a protecting system also. That's where plant botanicals and essential oils and things come from. Plants build those up to protect themselves, and if they're sick, they can't do it.
Mm-hmm. And how has the colleges changed, or haven't they? I mean, I remember when Bird was alive, that was the big moan down, was that there was no way to reach the young farmers because they would go to these land-grant colleges or they'd go to the local university, the Extension Service or something. And the only option they were given was this heavily corporatized, subsidized chemical warfare farming.
So that's why today, I always said, they say, well, the universities don't support what you say. And I say, well, first, the universities don't do systems research. And I say, what university are we talking about? Because I can find an incredible number of really sincere, career, hardworking university professors that are trying to figure this thing out. Now, you got to realize they got to do research where the money comes from.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. And the other thing, they don't ever get to do a long-term systems approach, and so it's just usually parts and pieces, but there's a lot of really good research going on, and there's a lot of people really sensitive. Sometimes their hands are tied, but I love to see what's going on in agriculture today. You can't even get an argument anymore with anybody. They don't disagree, they just don't know necessarily how to pull it off or how to do it. And so I said there's a lot of that's why I tried to do systems research, but it's very, very difficult because you got to be able to change as you're going along. You can't lay a 3-year plan in place. It's like, and all of a sudden you say, well, I need to correct this, or I got to be able to modify it as I go. And of course, research is not set up on change. It's set up on having very structured kind of a plan.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting. I remember for years I would interview Ralph Grossi, I think his name was, from American Farmland Trust. And we were talking about even one of the problems is just the farmland, as you pointed out with your own son. He wouldn't be able to afford it if he had to buy in today. But these mega corporations who have really taken over the small farmer, have you seen a change in that? Are we sort of moving back towards some of the small farming operations?
I see there's two things here, because I'm involved with a project at Frank Lloyd Wright's farm, Taliesin. We're trying to get small-scale 20, 30-acre farmers that produce a lot of local food and high-quality food. And there's a lot of people that want to farm. The people we got running the farm, she's from Brazil and he's from New York, and they're very well-educated, but they can't get in the scale that my son has gotten into it. So I see that's huge movement. On a large scale, I see a lot of land investment people that are actually some really big food companies, too. They're actually putting pressure on how they're going to raise their food. I think the food giants are fighting over reputation, and they all want to have the highest, best quality, most sustainable type produced food. And so even though some young guy can't afford to go out and buy his size of farm now, you got to recognize that things got so expensive out here in equipment that you almost got to farm a certain size. You can't afford to be in the game. That's probably we didn't choose to be a 1,000-acre farmer. We were kind of driven to 1,000 acres as an organic farm. That's a fairly large farm. Now, like I said, my son's been in it for 20 years. It's almost impossible. But there's companies and corporations and people out here that are going to drive this change, and there'll be opportunities for young people in this business, lots of them, but they might not be owning their own farm.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Meaning you feel like there's going to be an opportunity of leasing land, leasing farms?
I think there's going to be an opportunity from large land investment groups, and we are working with some, that they will purchase the land, and they will be forcing it to be farmed biologically.
That's fascinating. And
some of that organic, see, organic farming, and we farm organically ourselves. Organic isn't really a system of farming. You see, organic is really what the rules are. Not doing. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. I didn't put chemicals. I didn't do that. So I must be organic. It doesn't mean you got mineral rich. You just had the whole session on remineralization of the earth. Organic does not involve remineralization.
No.
That's what separates biological out. So these companies want it farmed biologically, but they don't want to take half yield. See this whole story about, oh, if we go away from chemicals, how are we going to feed the world? I will challenge anybody in my neighborhood on yield. I not only get healthy crops, but I've got some pretty high yields. I will challenge anybody on that yield. If yield is minerals, sunshine, and water in a biological base, and if I got that working organically, or if I don't use their conventional tools, if I don't need them, why would I use them? So that's why this whole thing about this, the change of how we grow the food and the health of that thing is really critical.
That's just fascinating. I mean, that you see that that's actually a direction that things could go. I mean, you don't want it to turn out to be surf farming again, but it's a beautiful notion that those who are sort of, you know, in the capital business, so to speak, are going to run where those of us who have been pushing for so many decades with out necessarily the signs we wanted to see sooner than they're coming, but I'm really glad to hear it.
And I work with my business. I had three partners, and one passed away, and the other two retired. So I brought on financial partners because I really see this expansion and growth. And we got involved, I mentioned earlier, about making fertilizer on the back end of anaerobic digesters. These large farms got a huge manure problem. You can't dump. They don't have enough land base for all the cattle they have or all the chickens they have. And so we've been able to, with an anaerobic digester, we get some energy, but then we can take that manure, extract all the minerals back out of it, and add things and manufacture fertilizer on it. So I brought on these financial partners to do this project, and we're starting in Indiana. But they're very sincere, and they live on this planet also, and a lot of them eat organically, and they really like what we're doing. And I was out in South Dakota last week on a 50,000-acre farm. It's for sale, and there's some land company interested in buying it, but it will be farmed differently. They want to transfer it over to organic. Half of the farm will be grass-fed beef, finishing beef, and the other half will be wheat and small grains. Those are very simple systems of farming for South Dakota. There's a huge market for the organic wheat and small grains, and grass-fed beef is getting so popular that I can make that system simple enough that the farmers, it won't be such a big learning curve because they don't involve weed control. It's a much simpler system. But that's a land company buying that, forcing a farming system. the farmer out there said to me that's farming it now, he said, he's been renting it, and he said, I don't understand. We didn't do a very good job of educating the consumer. This GMO stuff is really good and really safe, and how else are we supposed to farm? And I said, I don't want to offend you, Mr. Farmer, I said, but your opinion doesn't really matter. Because I said, it's just an opinion. The consumer doesn't want that anymore. The environmentalists don't want it anymore. And so I said, I think you better learn how to farm and the way people want to buy food and what they want to eat. And that's not what you've been growing.
So interesting that the consumer really has driven this. And, you know, when you look at, I've been in the holistic healthcare field for 30-some years and founded one of the oldest holistic healing centers in the country. And I remember when we started, people like, they looked at you like you were some sort of cross-eyed monster, like acupuncture. You would do something that's thousands of years old rather than take our medicine. And when you talked about the animals, you know, it made me really think how tragic that we have tortured our animals and we have tortured our soil. And the same model of exploiting everything to take as much out of it as we can, the extraction of life force, has really been what we've done worldwide to everything.
Everything. And we forced the farmer to get big in this confinement. We forced them. Now let's force them to farm more sanely. I think they're ready for it, but they got to be paid for it. We don't have cheap food because we haven't cleaned up the environment or got people healthy. It's not cheap food. It's expensive food.
It's very expensive. And organic, you know, when I talk to people about it, particularly those with chronic health problems, and I suggest it for their family, they say, we can't afford it. And I said, well, if you add in your medical bills and everything else you're doing and your decrease in life value, you can afford it if you choose to. So with more people doing it, the costs will come down. But, you know, you seem to be the guy to pass something on to. I have a habit of coming up with ideas and then looking for somebody else to do them because I'm not the right person. So you're in with investors. I don't understand why there aren't any green banks, particularly in the farming industry, where that's all they will fund are green projects, because people like me and people like us worldwide would much prefer to put their money in a bank that were funding restoration and, you know, proper life things on the planet than just money to corporations that are destroying us or controlling population. So that's a thought to talk about some of these entrepreneurial types you might meet who have the money to buy that kind of acreage. They probably know bankers, and somebody can start a green bank.
I've heard rumblings about that. I heard things about it. And these people, there are some of these wealthy people, all of them have foundations and funds and things, and they do want to be green with that money. So I guess they become the bank in that situation, but we have been dealing with some banks out here because some of these farmers in crisis, one way might to get them out of crisis as a workout plan, because financially right now it's a tough time in the countryside.
Yeah.
So it might be a way that some of these banks are looking at them and having us get involved and lay out a biological farming system that can help get themselves out of the hole that they got dug for themselves.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. So we're going to take our last break of the hour, and then we're going to come back because I have more questions. Our guest is Gary Zimmer. You can learn more about his amazing life work at www.MidwesternBioAg.com, MidwesternBioAg.com. And you can buy Gary's books, and you can learn more and get other resources at Acres USA, and you can find them at AcresUSA.com.
Hi, this is Lori Davies Adams, the Executive Director of the Pollinator Partnership. You can find us at pollinator.org. You're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Zahara Hieronymus. I hope you'll pay attention to pollinators and plant for them. Visit our website, pollinator.org, for all you need to help them.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Zoe Hieronymus. Gary Zimmer is our guest. And again, if you want to buy his books, The Biological Farmer, A Complete Guide to the Sustainable and Profitable Biological System of Farming, you can do so at Acres USA. You can call them at 1-800-355-5313. And if you have internet access, go to their website and you will see CDs, books, all kinds of extraordinary, varied items on so many different aspects of life, not just farming. 1-800-355-5313 is their phone number. Again, I thank them for the marvelous work they've been doing these 40 years of really helping people all over the world who are interested in learning. And they have these beautiful conferences. You go to www.acresusa and Gary Zimmer's website, MidwesternBioAg.com. So you, Gary, you work with lots of people, and you'll go to, as you pointed out just in our conversation, you've been in several states recently, you go to individual farms, and then the remedies are individualized as if you're a doctor talking to a patient.
Yes, and we have actually over the years, because I'm an educator, I've trained about 60 consultants that we have working for us around the Midwest and then some out west and other places. Now, since that book came out from Acres, I've been whipped around this planet a lot of different times. I'm a real good observer, and I've learned a lot. I just got back from a trip in Mexico that's really interesting. 8,000 acres of vegetables, of which 2,000 are certified organic. And the owner's been around a while, and his comment is just mind-boggling. He said, "We have not got the flavor in our food that we had 10 years ago, and I'm going to change something."
Mm-hmm.
And so that is kind of exciting, because mm-hmm. I think now they're fighting over that flavor kind of thing. So I do get all over the planet, and I worked at every crop you can possibly imagine. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're a cow, a pig, a horse, or a rabbit. It still takes nutritional food. It doesn't matter if I'm growing grapes or bananas or alfalfa hay for cows. It's mineral balance, and it's getting on healthy soils where you got this huge biodiversity. And once the system works, it works for all different kinds of crops. It doesn't matter what crop. That's how I can be all over this planet.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. So the microorganism, you know, I remember we used to talk about worms, how much we love the worms in our soil. And other people say, well, what do you need them for? Talk to us a bit about worms.
Yes, now worms are kind of, we got to recycle things, and they're kind of an indicator they got to have food, and you got to have an ideal condition or they won't thrive. Now, I look at what we feed them and how we feed them and what time of the year we count and study worms, but my definition of sustainability is 25 worms in a cubic foot and zero soil loss. Now, until you achieve
I can't do the conversions. What's a cubic foot for those of us that still are doing feet and inches? What's that?
Well, just a square foot. There's 43,000 square feet on an acre, a little more than that. So that's one small hunk of an acre, 1 foot square. And if you dig down deep foot, just mark out a foot square and dig down a foot, you have a cubic foot of soil. And in there is where we want to see our 25 worms.
I see. All right. And the worms, because they will only exist if there's nutrients for them, it tells you already that the soil's better than if there's no worms.
Yes. They need things. They need minerals. And they also can't, obviously, some of the chemistry you use in conventional farming, they don't survive.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is they have to be fed. And they can't live in a hard, tight, packed soil. They need air. They need water. And they got to have food. So this whole thing about understanding how to feed soil life now, more complex, more mature plants, if that's a better word, diet for, you know, worms will chew that up better. If you take a young succulent clover or some grass crop, that's going to digest very fast, and that's more of a bacterial food. So we learned on what we put in the soil for feed and how we treat the soil is what we get for life that lives in it. And we can manipulate that by the type of feed we feed, and that's really the base of biological fiber. So worms are just a really good indicator. The smell of the soil is another good indicator. That loose, crumbly chocolate cake structure of soil has is another really good indicator. So there's lots of indicators of soil improving.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. You know so much. I feel completely inadequate.
Wait till you get my age and you'll know all that too. Oh.
I may be close to your age and I don't know anything like you know in terms of what you know about. I know about other stuff. So when you look back, though, at the early writings that I remember about nutrition and soil, I don't quite understand how we had this disconnection between appreciating that human health and how the health of our vegetables and what we eat determine human health. It was like somehow or other there was like this, I don't know, separation in our thinking.
And I think what happened was, like my grandfather, I say he wasn't a biologic farmer. He didn't know. He didn't understand soil minerals and this testing. And they were in battle with weeds, and they'd plow, dig, and disc. And so when chemistry came along and they could kill weeds without, you know, all that effort, and they could put on nitrogen and things would really grow, because if they had an ideal operating biological system, the chemistry that came along wouldn't have been necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But see, that was, so then they had these pretty healthy soils because they weren't abusing them to most part, a lot of guys over-tilled, but they weren't, they were still had a lot of residues and even weeds growing in them, so they had earthworms and life in the soil. When I was a kid, when you, birds would follow us when we plowed the soil because there was worms everywhere.
Right.
So they had pretty good structure in life, and then chemistry came along, they got this huge jump. But 40 years later, the chemistry in the soils got hard and tight, and now we got all these problems that come with it. So I think it's like boiling that frog, if that's a term. I think a change took place, and the generation of farmers, they have no idea what it was like 40 years ago. They didn't come from there. So they only know what we saw as conventional farming. And I said that's why all the media stuff is really helping drive their changes.
Mm-hmm. And when you travel the world, as Joanna Campe and Don Weaver talked to us about, Joanna was saying that Brazil is now we can look to as a leader for remineralizing soil and organic foods. Are there parts of the world where you went a while back and then you returned after things have been done or not been done? I mean, what are some success stories that you thought, wow, this has really made my life work worthwhile?
Yes. I think Australia has been, I actually travel to countries that speak English. If you notice, I speak fairly fast, and I don't do well with translators and because I can't talk science and chemistry. So Australia, and if you think about the Australian farmers, when I first started going over there in 2000, there was a movement going on, and of course they don't have government interventions, so they don't get a big government check, and so they have, and it's a harsh climate, and it's old, and it's been farmed out, but this biological farming movement has really taken off in Australia, and all the way down to, just as a sidebar, and I could be totally wrong on this, but the Australians and the other countries, South Africans, if you look at the world wine competitions, mm-hmm. they've done really well, because they're growing their crops on healthy mineralized soils. It completely changed the wine quality, and it got better. Now, the other place I do a lot of work and had a fairly large impact is South Africa. I have partners in South Africa, and they milk 70,000 cows, but they're all 100% grass-based, and each farm is 1,000 cows. And I got started because they wanted to reduce commercial fertilizer, and they wanted to reduce the amount of grain they fed those cows because they had to purchase that. And we've had a huge amount of success by manufacturing fertilizers there and getting more legumes and changing the minerals in the soil and got rid of most of their nitrogen and got rid of quite a bit of their grain that they fed their cows.
That's beautiful. And so, you know, the discussion I always end up having with just about every activist on every issue is how difficult it is to move our nation. And you might find individual states or counties within the states. I mean, just the fracking movement and trying to stop fracking or, you know, the sensible solutions that need to happen and how challenging it is. And that there's always some sort of obstruction that comes down to body politic and the politicians being supported by the corporations and the corporation that may not yet be looking for the organic or looking to do soil remineralization, but wants to use up its inventory of whatever it is. So how, when you look at those obstacles, what are ways that you found that convince others?
Well, I think what it is that farmers are still a proud bunch of people. And I think these facts, like I said earlier, that we're going from 150 to 300 bushel corn, that's a pride factor. And in order to get there, they really got to go after soil health. They can never let that crop have a bad day. And so that, just now, they're not saying, I want to grow this better, healthier food for the people. And then the other thing, I think they read all the magazines and there's a lot of government pressure being put on, although we allowed all those big farms to get there with all their manure. I'm always worried about large livestock farms mm-hmm. and the contamination they do.
Yeah.
That's why making fertilizer in those farms. But I think so this whole thing about the pride thing, just like there's a farm in Michigan that we work with. He's the largest. He's got the number one quality potatoes going into Frito-Lays, and he's a very large farm. Now, you see, they're proud of that. And he didn't get there by doing what everybody else is doing. So that's the driving factor in this mm-hmm. thing. And the other thing is they got to make money. Hard times are good times. Hard times gets farmers to change. Right now, every farm you go, there's nobody arguing. They all want to know, how can I do this better? How can I survive? They're survivors. And so right now, the cover crops are scared to spend more money, but trying to get a healthier crop, trying to reduce, I tell people, putting on more nitrogen, herbicides, insecticides, fungicides, pesticides, never makes your farm better next year, and it's just money gone.
Yeah.
If I could take those dollars to spend them on health or cover crops or getting soils healthy, see, I at least every year would be getting better and better and better.
Yeah, it's so interesting, the things that are beginning to happen. I mean, it's really lovely, particularly for those of us who have been at this myself since I was 14. I remember handing out flyers on acid rain so long ago. And it's been such an uphill battle, and it's almost, I mean, the tragedy is also our silver lining, as they always say. You know, there's always this gift or concealed good, that things have gotten so bad that people want something really good now.
Yes, I always say that with the farmers or with the people. It has to get bad enough before it can get better.
Evidently.
People have to get sick enough. The farmer has to get broke enough. He has to get tired of fighting all the problems. He has to get tired of... See, the other thing biological farming does, they get proud of what they do. These people are pretty proud out there. They work really hard. So what biological farming does is give them... It puts fun back in farming again. It's not fun for them to be a slave to agribusiness. If they're now taking charge and they can do some things out here and they can talk about, look what they're doing for soil health, look what they're doing to clean up the environment. See, there's a lot of pride in that kind of an aspect, too. So that's and they're having fun. They're not having fun now if they're just struggling to pay their bills and all they do is buy what someone tells them to buy to put on for the latest, greatest chemical. But when they get involved in taking charge of their land as a biological farmer, they are now in the game, and it's amazing how excited they get. I always tell people the hardest thing to change is the 6 inches between their ears, not the 6 inches on the top of the soil.
When those six inches
between the ears starts to change, they really get into the game, and it's so exciting to see, because now they start, you don't have to sell them, they start asking questions, they want to drive this thing forward, and that is fun.
And so to everybody in the listening audience who's a consumer, evidently being a consumer of wanting healthful foods and saying no to GMOs, how important it is to tell the grocer wherever you buy your foods that you thank them for organic foods, or tell them not to bring any GMOs, and at least if they're not labeled, don't even consider it.
Yes, and I think that's the whole thing is that organic, I tell people, you have a say with your dollar, and the more and more organic is the only thing growing, and I'm not saying organic is hear all and end all, but we can take somewhere in the middle with small amount of interventions, we can grow a lot better, healthier, nutritious food, and the need for that harsh stuff would be gone. So I said, but right now the organic is the best show on the earth, and that is going to drive it, and that's what these big food companies and everybody else, they're really going after. They want the consumers. They're going to buy. They're going to grow what, force farmers to grow what the consumer wants to buy, and that's what the consumers got to be a big part of this.
That's just, I mean, it's music to my ears. And so then we add remineralizing the soil to it, and then we also help rebalance the earth. So it's a win-win-win, and you can't ask for any better solution than that. Look, we have about a minute or so left. Gary, anything you want to say in parting? And again, happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Oh, this has been a real pleasure, and as you can see, I'm passionate about agriculture. I've been in it for a long time, and it is very exciting. It's almost like seeing this little thing we fed started 40 years ago, they laughed at me, and now nobody's laughing anymore, and it's nice to see those changes. And yes, I just see it. Once this snowball starts, it's going to keep going, and it's kind of exciting, and I think we're beyond it not being successful.
That's so, I can't tell you how happy you've made me. A gift to me on your Father's Day. Thank you so much, because you really are the father of biological farming, and to hear you say that you think we're beyond that sort of blockage that's been so difficult to change worldwide is really a tribute to you, all the people like yourself, Acres USA, Charlie Walters, his son Fred, Chris Bird, everybody we've mentioned, Joanna Compe, and Don Weaver, our other guests this evening. Thank you, Gary.
My pleasure.
You do a beautiful job. The Biological Farmer and Advancing Biological Farming. You can go to www.midwesternbioag.com. That's midwesternbioag.com. If you know a farmer who wants better results, give them a call. Also, acresusa.com and remineralize.org, soilandhealth.org, and 21st21stcenturyradio.com.
On Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Jack Callahan.